Hello everyone and welcome to the second instalment of our four-part mini-series Fringe Fridays, where today we are throwing the spotlight onto the Vaults Festival, which has been happening over the past 8 years underneath Waterloo Station in London. And so joining me in the studio today is Beverly Andrews, who herself had her name against two of the productions in this year's festival. Also in this episode, we'll be having a chat about race equality, Black Lives Matters, and advice that Beverly may have for you listeners who want to get involved with writing yourself. So, without further ado, let's get on with the show.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Stage of Place. Today on our Fringe Fridays, we're chatting to Beverly Andrews, who this year at the Vault Festival in London was a part of two productions, Anna Wan's Song, to which she wrote, and Angels, to which she directed. Beverly, welcome to the Stage of Place.
Hello. And thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm hot. I'm very, yeah. very hot. But on the other hand, enjoying the sunshine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It must be really nice, especially now that we can very slowly come out of our houses if we want to and feel safe. You know, I'm sure that there's a lot of people wanting to get out in the sunshine right now.
Yeah, definitely. But to remember, I guess, to do it safely as well.
Yeah, exactly. Today, Beverly, I wanted to chat to you about the Vault Festival, which you were involved in this year with two different productions. And before we get into those productions, my first question for you is, how did you get into the industry? Because you, we should talk about, are a playwright and a director. So for you, how did theatre become a part of your life?
I've always written. I've written as a little girl, but then I took a sideway path and became a dancer. And then I did my university degree in Toronto, where I studied classical dance at the York University, and then went to Paris for a year where I modeled, and then came to the UK and I danced, and then slowly I segued into going back to my first love, writing. And I act as well, and directing, and then directing. I've directed one feature-length documentary too. Yeah. So, and I guess the play, in a way, that really started me off was one. I was dancing at the Royal Opera House in a opera there, and I wanted to write something for some of the other dancers I was working with about September 11th, called One September Night. And to my amazement, I got funding. It ended up being done. Our first stage reading was at Ercole, but then it ended up being invited into the Lyft Festival, where it was produced in the Barge House, which is this amazing space on the South Bank. And it was then filmed. And then it was done as part of an international theater conference called Women's Playwright International in Jakarta. And just recently, the rights have been bought by Smith Scripps to do productions, international productions of it.
Amazing. And so how did that feel getting funding? Because I feel like right now, like especially like recently, like it's really difficult to get those applications in and to get funding for those projects. So for you, what was that like to have one of your
It was absolutely amazing. And I will say I had been turned down for that, I think, twice. But then they just opened Decibel, that was specifically targeted at Black and minority playwrights. And they invited me into for chat. And so, and then they felt, because One September's Night actually looks at September 11th, but through the eyes of a British Muslim man who's grown up here and who's been brought up here. And what happens when something you have no control over, something you have no sympathy with, occurs, and it completely changes how people then view you. Yeah. And they felt it was an important piece to do. So I was really lucky. And then subsequently, I have been funded for most things I've wanted to write.
It's amazing. And so with the Vault Festival, you took Anna Wan's Song, which you wrote and was directed by Murray Woodfield, which looked at a Native American Afghanistan military veteran. And prior to the Vault Festival, it was shortlisted for the Sundance Theatre Lab. Can you tell me a little bit about the writing process for that piece and what you want to achieve with bringing the piece to the festival?
It was, well, I I received funding about 10 years ago for that, and it was done as a stage reading at the Tricycle Theater, which is now the Kiln. And yeah. I'm of Native American descent. My great-grandmother was a member of the Choctaw tribe, which is a tribe that has the traditional tribal lands or the southern coast in America. And my great-grandmother came from the southern coast in Louisiana. That is now virtually underwater because of rising sea levels. You know, so they're really being hit by global warming.
Yeah.
And I wanted to write something for her. And then the specific idea was triggered by a news report on the BBC World Service that was looking at the fact that Native American military veterans were returning with the worst post-traumatic stress of almost any ethnic group. And it was a form of post-traumatic stress that was so difficult to treat. And the only success stories they found that they had was when they returned to traditional methods. And so it was just that sparked my idea, you know, of me wanting to explore it more and then write about it. And then I was so lucky that I actually met a Native American military veteran. I'm a Buddhist who happened by coincidence to also be a Buddhist. A mutual friend introduced us. And he's quite a bit older. He fought in Cambodia, actually. And so we spent a lot of time chatting about his experiences there. And the story also is coupled with of an Afghani boy who's being groomed to be a suicide bomber. And I also met a refugee from Afghanistan who actually had lived in the camps. And so it was, you know, meeting those two people that really, really, really helped me write it.
That's amazing, because obviously, so we should say that I was involved in the project as the stage manager for the piece. And just hearing what you just talked about there, like, I didn't realize how much of the process was brought into the show. That's really opened my eyes as to, you know, the research gone into the show.
Yeah, I feel really strongly about that. I feel, on one hand, as a Black playwright, I feel that we do not necessarily have to be restricted in what we write. But I think if you are going to write, you know, I'm of Native American ancestry, but I did not grow up within a Native American community. If I'm going to write that play, then it's important for me to talk to people who've had those experiences.
Yeah, and I should say also that what I really loved about being involved in the project was the richly diverse cast that we had on stage. For you, how important was that to make sure that you had the right, you know, appropriate
actors.
People?
No, it was huge. It was absolutely huge. And it was really, really difficult because when we were auditioning, because this is one of the projects where we did not have funding. So when we didn't have anything to offer except the play and the slot at the vault. And a lot of the people who came to audition just weren't right. And I was really, really, really panicking. And ironically, it took the playwright on the play I directed, Angels, she knew the actress who ended up joining the cast, Deanna, who is Native American and also belongs to one of the tribal groups in South America. Yeah. And she lives here. And she then put me in touch with Jay, who is Native American and Mexican. And then there's one other part, and I was just frantic. I was determined we would get someone else who was right. And as a Buddhist, I came home and I really chanted. And it was just such a strange coincidence of events that it was simply Googling that I happened to come up with Daniel's agency. And at that point, I didn't even know he was of Native American descent from the same tribal background that I'm from.
Yeah.
I just knew he looked right. And then miraculously, I found his email and I emailed him and we met. And he said, you know, he told me his background and he was the third actor and he joined.
Amazing. And obviously, his representation on stage, I think, is so important. There's a lot in the media about representation and misrepresentation in movies. You know, when there's so many actors out there who can fit the part, you know, and they're just so mistreated. I think with Anna Wong's song, I really appreciated in the rehearsals the stories that were coming out from the actors about their, you know, about their descent and about, you know, how they felt towards this play.
That I really love the fact that I felt it was an actor-centric piece. And what that means was that a director, you know, I always feel this way as a director, you know, coming from an acting background, that actors should be the center of the piece, but often they're not. Yeah. And I think that Murray really went out of his way to actually said, okay, I want the voices of the actors to inform as well what's on page, you know, because as playwrights, the script is there, but it's not set in stone. And if someone feels it's not right, or they're having problems saying certain lines, or they feel that somehow or another it doesn't quite reflect their experience, then I think, you know, we want to hear about that and talk about it.
Yeah. And along with Anna Wan's song, which we're just talking about there, you did speak a little bit before about you being involved in Diane Herbert's production of Angels, to which you took the directional role. And that looked into the life of three sex workers. Can you tell me what drew you as a director to be involved with that piece?
Yeah, I was involved with Angels from its inception 2 years ago when we had a development week at the New Diorama. And what I really loved about Angels is that often women who work in the sex industry are stigmatized. You don't, and you hear their voices through the prism of often a male writer or male director. You don't actually genuinely hear their voices. And what I loved about Angels was it was written by someone who worked in the sex industry, that Diane had been a former table dancer. And it was based on her experience. And so that was definitely what drew me to the play.
Yeah, and I came to see one of the performances at the Vault Festival. Mm-hmm. And what I really enjoy about Fringe Theatre is the differences of age ranges and of people that watch the shows, especially with Angels, because even though it wasn't a huge audience that we had on the performance that I came to see, what was really nice to see was the intentiveness of everyone in that audience. And that must be really nice to see as a director.
It was definitely, it really opened my eyes, because we got a lot of older women came to see it and really were cheering and said, oh, this is a really feminist play. And I hoped that women would come and see it and see themselves as the dancers, because women who work in the sex industry are no different from women who don't. It's you know, there are a whole host of reasons why they may be in working in the sex industry. But what I really wanted was to de-stigmatize the industry and for women to be able to identify with the characters on stage. And a lot of women absolutely did, which was really, really great. I really, really, you know, I loved that.
That's amazing. And again, that's the other thing with Fringe Theatre. You as a artists can be there throughout all those performances if you wish to, and hear those audiences' feedback that you know that they give you.
No, definitely, you know, because what Angels was much more controversial than Anna Wan's song, and we did have some women who took issues, some women who were uncomfortable, you know, with it. But in a way, I actually kind of really like that. I like that people. You know, with Anna Wan's song, in terms of audience response, we were really quite lucky, and people came out going, oh my God, you know, it is amazing. With Angels, it was a little bit more split, you know, but in a way, to me, that should be the role of art, that people can come out and argue and see completely different things. I think that's great. I think theater should be a place where we can have a safe space where we can have a debate.
That's exactly it. It's that debate, it's that conversation afterwards, that, you know, you could go to dinner afterwards and chat about the show, and not everybody may have the same opinions. Absolutely. And I think that's what's so brilliant about a production, and a production like Angels. Not everybody may have the same opinion, but you can feel strongly about the opinion that you may have.
Absolutely. And it's fine to have that, you know. Yeah. I think, unfortunately, we've reached the point where, in a way, everything has become so polarized that if someone disagrees with your opinion, it's like you don't just disagree with them, you hate them. You want to kill them. You want to do them physical harm. And that's not healthy. And it's, you know, it's a great, I saw one of the most beautiful plays I think I've ever seen was a production by Peter Brook of a play called 10 and 11. And it was at the Barbican a couple of years ago. And it was simply based on a true story, simply about two tribal groups. And I think this was possibly Islam, but it could have been almost any faith, where the leaders of those faiths disagreed at how many times a prayer should be said. Should it be said 10 times or should it be said 11 times?
Right.
And within the story, the two leaders of these different schools of the same faith, I have to stress, met one night, and it was done beautifully. You just saw them pacing the stage with these lights and just talked and went through the canon of the faith. And I think it was the head of the school of 11 came to the agreement that it should be, no, it was 11 and 12. It should be only said, he was the head of the school of 12. It should only be said 11 times. So they came to an agreement. The problem was the followers did not. Okay. And then this was also during the days of the British Empire and the colonial power saw a way, and the French Empire, of going in and manipulating those divisions to their own benefit. And so basically, ultimately, what happens is a war ensues. And I think both leaders end up being exiled, and the only one who benefits is the former colonial power. But that, to me, that was just such an interesting look at what happens when we can't have dialogue, when we can't actually sit down and be able to talk to someone of the opposing view and actually come to some sort of like middle ground.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that leads really nicely onto my next question about being in post-lockdown when theatres are back open, what would you like to see changed in the theatre industry after everything that's been happening over the past few months? What are the kind of impacts that you'd like to be made within the industry?
I think so many things. I mean, I think one for, you know, is stating the obvious, but for the government to wake up to the fact that the arts are a huge, huge, huge selling point for this country. And out of, I think, all of the at least Western European countries, we have the lowest rate of government subsidy of any of those countries. I mean, in France, it's not even a subject of debate. Whichever, you know, part of the political spectrum that you're on, no one would actually campaign on reducing funding to the arts. It's, in a way, it's kind of tied into the sense of national identity. We're in this country, that just isn't the case. And it's a bit insane. And that $500 million rescue package for the arts may sound generous, but when you actually look at how that's going to be broken down and that will actually have to be used to stabilize museums and art galleries and theaters and opera houses, then it just seems like a drop in the ocean. So that would be a big thing. The other is, I guess, again, possibly stating the obvious, for the voices of women to be heard much more, for the voices of, you know, the voice of diversity to be heard much more. You know, the Arts Council as well made some really odd decisions in the last 10, 15 years where they'll take funding away from Black and Asian companies, sort of saying, well, they've achieved their goal and they're no longer needed. And then that money is then shunted to other quote unquote mainstream companies, which may do one Black or Asian play a year. And you think, well, no, that's not kind of good enough. Yeah. You know, particularly in cities which may have like a 25% BAME population, it's not reflecting what their taxes are going to. So that would be my other two things, that the voices of women very much should be heard and the voices of ethnic minorities should, you know, that the kind of work should reflect the diversity within the communities that those companies serve.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, yeah, I definitely feel like, you know, there was some threads in the water about that, you know, coming to float, you know, before lockdown and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, there definitely needs to be a bigger push for that in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, I think with the Black Lives Matter, you know, the broader debate about Black Lives Matter, a lot of companies have actually started to realize that they need to do better.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I think definitely that debate has already started. The most important thing is for it to continue, not for it to disappear.
Yeah. And moving back to Fringe Theatre, for my last mm-hmm. question for you today, Beverly, is why do you believe that Fringe Theatre is so important for our industry? Yeah.
I think because it feeds the mainstream. I think that if you look at some of the sort of famous directors, they often, you know, people like Katie Mitchell, they've started in Fringe and then their careers have then taken them on to places like the RSC, you know, for actors as well. And, you know, I was hearing a program on King Campbell and I was amazed at how many actors who are like really, you know, Toby Stevens, you know, that all these famous actors who had worked with him, you know, over the years, you know, so the Fringe feeds the mainstream. If you don't have a viable Fringe, then you're not going to have a viable mainstream. And the Fringe tends to attract actors from more diverse economic backgrounds as well. As theater schools become more expensive, it will attract maybe actors who didn't go to drama schools, who found training in other ways or something, you know, and you need that. And, you know, if you don't have that, then you're going to end up with actors from the same economic background, same, who are basically kind of middle class white British, just featured in mainstream shows. And I think that's unhealthy. And I also think it's a place for writers to be able to experiment in a safe space, where there isn't the economic pressure of doing a show at the National or doing a show at the RSC.
Yeah.
You know, if it's in a tiny theater, then it's you know, when at the Vault, I think there were over 500 shows there, and which is absolutely astonishing. And the fact that almost all those shows had some sort of audience, which was amazing. So offers those kind of opportunities. What I will say now, and I'll do a tiny plug for them as well, is that during lockdown, a lot of those shows have now migrated to online platforms. And I've had two shows on. It's called the Actors Quarantine Collective that has their own YouTube channel. And they actually have shows from writers from all over the world. And I was lucky enough to have two of my plays, the Baghdad Othello, where we actually had actors from, one of our actresses was in Tbilisi, Georgia.
Wow.
You know, which is amazing. And it looks at Shakespeare's Othello, but I reversed the racial roles and I set it in post-invasion Iraq. And just looking at the tragedy of Iraq.
Yeah.
And the other show is Circles. And Circles is part of a bigger piece that looked at four stories all loosely linked to HIV and AIDS. And Circles, Michael's story, is the one most directly linked to AIDS. And it's set in the mid-1970s before AIDS had been discovered and then 20 years after that. So, you know, but there are loads of other things that I didn't write that are on the Actors Quarantine Collective channel. So if you Google them, they'll come up, and it's on YouTube. They'll come up in the Google search.
Amazing. So diverse in you know, in all the productions that you've done. That sounds amazing.
I think as Buddhists, we always say that we talk about ways of accomplishing world peace, and which sounds like this huge, unimaginable idea, but I actually think if you look at it in a smaller scale, how do you, in a way, like, again, going back to the play 11 and 12, you know, the leaders, how their desire to establish harmony between their followers was through dialogue. And mm-hmm. so as a playwright, I think the way that, at least the way I can do it, is by writing plays about people from all sorts of backgrounds. So if I can get people to see what the world looks like walking in their shoes, then to me that's a step further down the line to creating a world of respect for each other.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, Beverly, I'd like to thank you so much for coming on to the episode today.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me. And you were a wonderful stage manager, by the way.
Oh, thank you. no, thank you so much. Yeah, I just really wanted to get you on today because I think, you know, Alan Wong's song for me, I've got the poster on my wall, actually. I'll just swivel up. That's been on my wall since then.
I love the show. I really, it was just magical on so many levels. And the fact that we started this with no money, nothing. And we ended up with a production team. And we actually were the runners up for the award for the most anticipated show of the entire fall festival.
Yes.
Which just floored me, you know, because I don't know how that happened.
So no, I know. That was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm very, very proud, but I'm very proud of both of them, of Alan Wong's song and of Angels. It was, you know, I'm happy that I said yes in both counts to do both of them.
Yeah, and that's why also, again, like why I wanted to get you on, because I know that both shows were really important with the topics and the themes. And I think it's really nice for our audiences and for our listeners to this podcast who may want to get into writing. To you know, understand that there's so much that we can chat about. If I can ask you one final question, actually, for people who might want to get into writing, what tips would you give them?
I would say enroll in a course. I think that I was lucky that there was a program that it's not still going on, but I was lucky that was part of an intake on a program called Screenwrite. That went for a year on weekends for writing for, it was basically focused on writing drama, continuing drama for television. And it was originally supported by Channel 4 and the BFI, as I remember. And then I think Channel 4 didn't support it for the second year, but then the BFI stepped in and supported all of it for the second year. But it was wonderful. It gave me such a firm foundation in terms of writing, you know, that targets were set. We had people from the industry who came to speak to us. And it really made me feel like when I left, that I had a better idea of just writing, the mechanics of writing. So there are places like Goldsmith, there are places like The City Lit, as well, where you can take writing courses just to investigate and find some writing course that you can actually enroll in and do it. Because I think if you've never written before, I think it's really hard. And I think having the support of being around other writers and a tutor you trust is invaluable.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much, Beverly, for that bit of advice. I'm sure that listeners out there will hopefully take some of that on in the future.
Oh, well, just thank you. It's been a joy being on the show. I've really enjoyed it. And I should have a shout out as well to the director of Alan Wong's song, Murray Woodfield, who created magic with nothing, you know, and it was, we ended up with a massive production team, props, everything, which was absolutely wonderful. And then Diane Herbert of Angels for writing a beautiful play and asking me to direct it.
Well, Beverly, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you. And everyone stay cool, stay safe, and enjoy your day. Take care.
And there we go, that was episode 2 of our brand new mini-series Fringe Fridays. I'd like to thank Beverly Andrews once again for coming into the studio to chat about her Vault Festival shows, Anna One's Song and Angels. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard today, you can follow us on Instagram at The Stagey Place. I've been Elliot, and until next time, I hope you're keeping well, and I look forward to hear from you soon.